Funding for this edition of Think Tank with Steve Adubato has been provided by
Valley Bank,
the Russell Berry Foundation, making a difference.
South Jersey Industries, the parent company of South Jersey Gas and Elizabethtown Gas. New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, providing New Jersey residents tools to save money on energy costs. Congress Hall, a Cape Resorts property. Holy Name. New Jersey Manufacturing Extension Program.
New Brunswick Development Corporation.
And by IBEW Local 102, lighting the path, leading the way.
Promotional support provided by
NJBIA. We put business at the center.
And by
New Jersey Globe.
Hi, everyone. Steve Adubato. We kick off the program as part of our Making a Difference series, organizations, nonprofits who make a difference in the lives of people every day, with Karen Milliken, who is Chief Commercial Officer at an organization called the Joy Do Foundation. Karen, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
You got a website is up. What is the organization? Who do you help every day?
So Joy Do is an organization that's focused on people who are on the spectrum, young adults primarily. And what we focus on is providing a whole life solution for them. A lot of people that are on the spectrum are really struggling, especially after they leave high school, to really be able to have work that's meaningful, to be able to be in a community of people that really understand them. And as their parents age, oftentimes they struggle to be on their own and need housing as well. So we try to help them with all the different areas that they may need in order to be successful in life.
You're talking about the autism spectrum, just to be clear. So help us on this. First, talk about the challenges as it relates to employment. What are those challenges?
So a lot of people that are on the spectrum may have challenges in communication. Some cases, they're not speaking at all. In fact, a large percentage are not speaking. And then they have other issues that sometimes can make it difficult to work in a corporate environment or a traditional business environment. For example, they may have stimming behaviors that are distracting to other people, or they may need special kinds of accommodations. They often have sensory sensitivities that make them very sensitive to light or sound or other things that could be challenging for them. And so what we try to do is help to first get them trained into jobs that are really matching their gifts, because they also have incredible gifts, many of them, to try to figure out what they're best at and to train them up in those areas. And then once they're ready, we get them employed. Typically, it's in high-tech jobs in a lot of different areas, and they work inside our location or other organizations in order to be able to do the work.
We're talking about people dealing with autism, 21 and over, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about housing, because the information the producer shared with me about your organization is that you focus on housing design. What is the connection, Karen, between housing design, the design of someone's place where they live, their home, their apartment, whatever we're talking about, and autism?
So for people that are on the spectrum and that need to be in a different type of housing situation when they leave home, oftentimes they struggle with a few different things. First is many of them also have motor planning challenges because of their brain is literally wired differently than ours. And that can affect other things. In some ways it's great because they can be brilliant and be able to do a lot of things that other people can't do, but sometimes it'll affect their gait when they're walking and they'll tend to bump into things, or they'll have fine motor pet challenges that make it hard for them to work with small switches, things like that. So when you're designing a home, you want to make sure that you make it clear walkways and rounded corners and all the things that make it easy for somebody who has motor planning challenges. But you also want to be able to let them customize it to themselves. So some people are really sensitive to light, for example, and certain types of light are a real problem. So you don't want, for example, fluorescent lighting.
Right.
And then they need to be able to dim it and make it the comfortable brightness for themselves. Certainly insulation is a big deal. You want to be able to not hear everybody else that's in the home all the time, because that can be a real challenge. But I think the main thing about housing that people really need to think about is they oftentimes are going to need what I would just call support inside the home. So in addition to the physical space, you really need the right staff there who would know how to work with people on the spectrum, because they do have different needs. And each individual is different. That's why they call it a spectrum. But there are common things that they need assistance with, and you really need to have great staff who really care about that and are able to work with them.
Speaking about caring, why do you care so much? Why is this work personal for you?
For me, the founders of this organization, Moishin and Knott, are longtime friends of mine. We actually started a software company together 25 plus years ago, and I watched their boys growing up. And I have to tell you, it was so powerful. For years, they're both non-speaking, both have motor planning.
Go back a little bit again.
Yeah.
Moish Tov is the father of two autistic sons, now 28 and 31.
Uh-huh.
You experienced, you saw those young men.
Yes, I saw them. I saw one of them born, and I watched them grow up. And I have to tell you that, honestly, when they were young, I didn't know anything about autism, and I don't even know that they were diagnosed necessarily initially. But I saw that they were going to have a lot of challenges, because they were both non-speaking. One was deaf. They both had motor planning challenges. They had a lot of the stimming behaviors and things that people see. And so I loved them so much. I mean, we spent lots of time together, but I really didn't know what was inside them truly, because they weren't able to fully communicate. And it was when one of them turned about 14, I think it was, iPads had come out, and people were discovering that a lot of people on the spectrum can use an iPad to type where they can't use a keyboard because of this issue with switching gaze, which is a common issue. So for the first time, especially when they have their elbows supported with what's called facilitated communication technique, they can type for the first time. And it was amazing. I mean, this kid wrote a 5-page letter. It was like a college person wrote it. Yep, you know, 4-syllable words, so eloquent. And it was so exciting to get to know him as a person, but it's also heartbreaking to hear from him, like what he had been through. It was just awful, honestly. And so it was at that time that Moishin and Knott decided to dedicate their lives to working with these young adults, because there were so many others that were in the same situation who, you know, wanted to be able to do something with their lives, and they needed a place so they could understand them and allow them to do that. So for me personally, to watch them develop and then to be able to be a part of this organization has just been a gift, honestly.
The organization is the Joy Do Foundation. The website has been up. Check it out. Find out more. It's an important organization making a difference every day. Karen, thank you so much for joining us. And we thank our friends at Valley Bank for connecting us. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
I'm Steve Adubato. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
To watch more Think Tank with Steve Adubato, find us online and follow us on social media.
A dream is just a dream until your ambition ignites it. Pursuing your legacy takes drive, resilience, and a financial partner who not only sees your vision for your future, but who will go all in with you and focus your ambitions for what you hunger to achieve next.
We are honored to be joined by the Honorable State Senator John Bersicelli, who represents the 3rd Legislative District. Senator, good to see you.
It is good to be with you. I appreciate this time.
You got to tell everyone where the 3rd District is, Senator.
It's in New Jersey.
It's in the South. I'm up in the North. Where are you?
We are tucked in Chiel South, just in the shadow of the city of Philadelphia, covering a good portion of Gloucester County, all of Salem County, and a number of towns in Cumberland County.
I just had a conversation on a different program in Alaire with your colleague, Senator Zwicker, Andrew Zwicker. You and Senator Zwicker and some of your colleagues on the Senate Oversight Committee held a very important hearing recently on the future of public media, public broadcasting, public media in the state. Why the hearing, and what did you take from it, Senator?
Well, Steve, as usual, you pack a lot into a couple sentences of a question. With traditional media, meaning print media, just almost non-existent, it's hard. I always remind people, when I arrived at the State House in 2002, you were there before I was, Press Row had 27 reporters on it. Now, not only are there not 27 reporters, there is no Press Row. So the ability to communicate out of the State House is really challenged, and people are starting to find different ways to get information. And we have to adapt. You know, the traditional model was NJTV, NJ Network. I get confused over a couple of different variations. The experiment with WNET, I shouldn't say experiment, the relationship didn't pan out the way everyone had hoped it was. Donald Trump, you know, accelerated that with his slashing of PBS money from the federal side. So from our standpoint, we have broadcast license, and the legislature knows that communication is paramount. People have to know what their government is doing, ideally. So I know the outgoing Murphy administration has done an RFP to hire a consultant. They won't hire that consultant, but the RFP, request for proposal, is in the works. And that'll be from the administrative side. From our side, it's very clear. We need to get the State House fully wired. Probably have to establish something that looks like a statewide C-SPAN as a backbone of information flowing out, and then draw the nonprofits in to fill out the day as far as content goes.
Sure.
Including yourself, by the way.
Well, thank you, Senator. Appreciate that. But I want to make this clear to folks. And in some ways, it's inside baseball, and in some ways, it's who we are. The Caucus Educational Corporation, our not-for-profit media production company, 15 years ago in 2011, partnered with WNET. They were the leaders. It was WNET who took on a 15-year commitment to operate public broadcasting in the state, first as NJTV, then as NJPBS. But as the senator so well stated, that's going to end because WNET is opting not to respond to the RFP, mostly for financial reasons.
Right.
That, and by the way, we'll do an in-depth interview with WNET Group President and CEO Neil Shapiro, our longtime colleague, to talk about the future of public media. But Senator, here's the question. What do you believe, and I asked your colleague Senator Zwicker this the same question, what do you believe the state's responsibilities, because as a leader of this organization, I raise money 24/7. You have to raise private money. But do you believe there's a state responsibility here, Senator, to support public media?
Oh, I think that there is. And there's also sources of revenue generated from the previous assets of New Jersey Public Broadcasting. And frankly, if you go back when the Christie administration made the move that they moved, we lost that vote in the Senate by one vote, if you recall.
Yes.
One senator went sideways. That $332 million that was gained from selling the bandwidth or whatever the term is was supposed to be put in an account, and that money was supposed to be reserved for the preservation of public broadcasting in New Jersey. We're in such financial straits, that money never made it there. Frankly, public broadcasting could have lived off the interest of the $332 million to a great extent. So the question is, do we replenish some of that? You know, we've got a $6 billion surplus. Does something go back in? Because there's got to be some funding. And I use the term backbone content. And I think that is a variation of the federal C-SPAN, because people enjoy looking at committee hearings. We as legislators like them because your grandmothers can see them, mothers can see them. Isn't that there's any vanity involved, but people are attracted to that stuff. And every one of our hearing rooms was supposed to be wired under the NET deal. That didn't happen. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Neil. He was there when we needed him because no one else wanted to do it.
Right.
You know, and then you guys filled in admirably so. So it is imperative that we support public media.
Let me ask you this, Senator. Explain to folks why. This is interesting because trust or distrust, if you will, in the media. Again, I'll try to separate public media. But the truth is, all of us engaged in media, if we have a president who calls us the enemy of the people, let's just start that that's a challenge. That's not an opinion. That's a challenge.
Correct.
That being said, there's a level of cynicism about those of us in media and also about those of you who lead in government. What do you think, without being too self-serving on my end, Senator, what can public media and should public media do to frankly shed more light on how the legislature actually works or doesn't work as it relates to important issues that matter in people's lives?
Well, look, you know, it's about gaining public trust. And, you know, everything old is new again. And at a given point, someone's going to just start talking about news and events and not worrying about being in the show business lane that has, you know, that has evolved, that, you know, we've all seen. And by the way, back to supporting public media, you know, Steve, you know, we're underwriting Netflix. So we support and underwrite a lot of things in the public interest. So, but as far as regaining trust, just gotta start become more matter of fact in my mind. You know, I don't want to go back to Walter Cronkite, but you know that stuff worked, and then it became entertainment. Go back and look at the Motion Picture Network. It was all talked about in an Academy Award winning picture, news becoming entertainment, and that's where this thing got off the rails. 24/7, you gotta be talking to people. You gotta be more sensational than you were in the previous story, and the news got lost in the entertainment. I mean, look, I was at a committee hearing the other day. I went in a substantive committee hearing. And as I told people, I went to a Senate committee hearing and the school board meeting broke out. I mean, because, you know, but, you know, was that good television? It would have been if there were cameras in the room.
So interesting, because when I was talking to Senator Zwicker about this, we're talking about clicks, you know, on our phone. Right. You know, listen, everybody wants, we love when people follow our stuff, but let's just be honest with each other. Some of the ways it takes for people to gain clicks, the so-called influencers, they're not having meaningful dialogue with members of the state legislature about issues that matter. And final question along those lines, Senator. Number one issue you believe the new governor, Mikey Sherrill, and the state legislature, you and your colleagues in the Senate and the lower house assembly need to deal with. What is that issue and why, Senator?
Well, first of all, I never call the assembly the lower house. I haven't spent 20 years there myself.
I should not have called it the lower house.
No. And I remind people there were 20 years and then was thrown out by 23,000 angry people who I never met. So I always tell people I served as a mayor, served in the assembly for 20 years and no indictments. You know, I should have got a sash or something leaving the building.
That's right.
Overall, the catch term you're hearing, which is the right term, is affordability. I mean, it's almost like a word transparency. It means something different to everyone you talk to about it. But expenses, I mean, look, our pension payment is going to be $7 billion. The Anchor program costs us $3 billion. Stay New Jersey is coming. These are all huge numbers. And, you know, holding this thing together is a challenge. People's expectation of the government continues to grow. And, you know, we continue to try and serve it.
You're listening to State Senator John Bersicelli from the 3rd District. And one of the many committees he serves on is the Senate Oversight Committee. We'll keep talking about the future of public media and future programs. Senator, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Steve.
You got to stay with us. We'll be right back.
To watch more Think Tank with Steve Adubato, find us online and follow us on social media.
At the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, affordability is always top of mind. We offer a variety of energy assistance and other programs to help New Jersey residents reduce their energy use and save money. The Community Solar Energy Program delivers immediate electric bill savings to all subscribers, regardless of income. And our free Comfort Partners program helps qualified residents save money and make energy efficient upgrades. We work to put affordability within reach for New Jersey residents.
Hey, folks, we have our good friend, Dr. Keith Strudler, the Dean of the College of Communications and Media at Montclair State University, back with us. Dean, good to see you.
It's great to be here.
You got it. By the way, before we go any further, we'll put up the website for Montclair State University. And also after that, our website will come up, steveadubato.org. Check out the in-depth interview that I did, a two-parter on Think Tank with Dr. Jonathan Coppell, the president of Montclair State University, about a range of issues. Hey, Keith, let me ask you this. P.S. to disclose, Keith and I talk about media offline all the time. What is the role, as you see it, of Montclair State University in particular and higher ed overall in the future of media/public media in the state of New Jersey and the nation?
Look, I think, and we're obviously well aware of some of the challenges that are acute here in New Jersey with public media, which are maybe particularly acute here, but are not, you know, certainly isolated to us across the country. With stations, networks, states are trying to figure out a sustainability plan. Look, I think we're pretty clear at Montclair, and I think it's consistent with what we've considered from our inception, which is we believe that we are a leader in sustaining and growing and coming up with the future plan for how public media should operate in the future. And we think that we will have a significant role in ensuring that public media is sustained in a couple of ways. One is certainly in conceptualizing the operations of what comes next. And that's something obviously we're all having a lot of conversations about.
Let me bring folks into this. I'm sorry for interrupting. To be clear, what the dean is talking about is WNET, our longtime partners in New York, the PBS flagship station, for 15 years since 2011, have operated the New Jersey Public Television Station. It is, in fact, that location, if you will, the license to it is owned by the state of New Jersey, but the operator is an outside entity. That is what the dean is talking about. And that ends, WNET will no longer operate NJPBS as of July 1st, 2026. Keith, pick up your point. I'm sorry.
Sure. And so we know that we're going to be an important part because of our facilities, because of the expertise we have here on campus, our faculty, and in places like the Center for Cooperative Media that, you know, their lifeblood is figuring out a sustainable path forward for journalism in a world in which people no longer consume news in the same way. So we want to be integral and central to that conversation about operating, you know, kind of what comes next. But on top of that, and I think this is really important, is we also want to make sure that we are central to figuring out, one, how there's a collaborative process so that we are hearing voices across the state. And I think one of the things that's going to be essential to the future of public media, which is very much what the center does, is figuring out how we're connecting with communities and connecting with storytellers across the state. And I think that's integral. And second, if there's going to be a future of public media, which we all know is essential, there needs to be a plan by which we are training the next generation of storytellers, journalists, filmmakers, sports media experts to be engaged in that process. So there needs to be both kind of a top-down and a bottom-up process by which we are working with kind of the next talented group of storytellers, but also we're hearing the voices of people that come through places like Montclair State to understand what is it that they want and they need. So if we tell them this is what you're giving you and they're telling us we're on TikTok all the time, then there's a disconnect that's not going to be sustainable. And so I think it's important, essential, vital that we are listening to the next generation.
So Keith, let me ask you this. And again, you and I keep talking about this. This is part of our larger Media Matters series. And Keith and I talk about an initiative that I created a while back. We've been talking about doing a course at Montclair State on media leadership and innovation, but is it all ultimately here, Keith? I mean, we're doing this. This is going to be on broadcast. It'll be on digital outlets. But do you believe ultimately it all winds up here?
You know, I wish I were smart enough to be able to give you, because then I'd be investing differently. Right. It's easy to say that. But I think, I don't know, you know,
is it a hybrid? Will it always be a hybrid?
Yeah, look, people are going to have TVs in their houses. What they use them for, you know, we'll have to figure out. But there is still the communal process of consuming media on large devices in your living room. I don't think that's going away. But I do think the way, we know that you know, we all get the message on Sunday when it keeps telling us that we consume media another 42% higher than the week before. And you're like, how did I spend 6 hours a day on this thing, right? So we know that this is the primary way in which people are consuming information. I think it's more important, though, beyond thinking about the device itself, thinking about the way in which they want to get that information. So
meaning,
it might mean they probably want smaller chunks of information. They want them in ways that are more easily digested and understood. They probably want them on multiple platforms, including platforms that we once thought, you know, were not utilitarian for news consumption. So I think it's perhaps less about the actual device that they're using, although the phone obviously is, you know, is the thing. Although, look, I mean, how many times have you talked to someone and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm coming to you for my watch, right? That's why it's like, it's the phone right now. It might be something else in the future.
But here, Keith, let me push back a little bit on this. So I think we've known each other long enough, and you've seen this, which was what we did with President Coppell. It was it's 1 hour of programming, two half hours. Again, you check it out on our Think Tank series. But here's what I'm trying to get at. I think about long-form podcasts. I think about long-form interviews like that. And I go, first of all, no disrespect, Keith, I have no interest in doing a three-minute back and forth with Keith Strudler, the dean at the College of Communication Media, Montclair State. Let's do it fast. Let's get it. Like, I don't even know what that is. So my question is, where's the place for long form substantive dialogue? How the heck do you do that in 3 minutes?
So I look again, that is the $1 billion question, but I don't think it's a binomial, right? And obviously often your 3 minute piece leads to your 30 minute consumption, right? And you're right. People have, look, and I know Joe Rogan's kind of the poster child, but Joe Rogan figured out how to get people.
It goes on for hours. Keith, it goes on for hours.
Hours. And by the way, not for nothing, I just watched, to talk a little bit about my consumption habits, I watched 3 hours of Charlie Sheen talking about the different abuses he has put through his body through. 3 hours. That's a story that could have been told in 10 minutes, but it was, you know, it was pretty good over 3 hours. You are right that there is an appetite for longer form work, right? I just don't know that it looks the way that we thought it did, but I do know that to get that audience, you need to be able to chunk your information in a way that draws people in. You know, as Steve, you know, we both have kids. My kids are sports fans. My kid, like, it was a few years ago when he told me he never watched a full basketball game, but he watched it in this like 45-minute compressed version where they basically turned a 2.5-hour game into a 45-minute highlight reel. Something we have to consider.
It works when I'm looking at the NFL. What's it called, team? Red Zone? I don't know. It's called something zone. You can see every game on Sunday in about 10 minutes. It may not work for meaningful, substantive public policy conversation, which ain't going to get you a lot of clicks. Never mind. Keith, you got me on my soapbox. I said I wasn't going to get there.
Yeah.
Before I let you go, your students, how many students in the College of Communication Media at MSU?
About 2,000 students in the college. You know, obviously really fast growing, amazing work. Just I'll brag for them just a little bit. I'm nominated again for 2 student Emmy Awards, the College Television Awards, in news, Steve, and recently won 2 Edward R. Murrow Awards in the student division. And we are one of 2 universities. Another's one I happen to have a particular interest. One of 2 universities in the country that won 2 of those. And so they're doing, look, our students do amazing work. We are training the future, but as we say, we're listening to them about how we can help reach them differently.
And interesting, as we wrap up, Keith Strudler, the dean, mentioned Edward R. Murrow, the great Murrow. I always wonder how he would have done on TikTok. That's another issue, but that's Dr. Keith Strudler, who's the dean of the College of Communication and Media at my alma mater, Montclair State University. Good to see you, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Absolutely. Have a great one.
You got it. I'm Steve Adubato. That's the dean. We'll see you next time.
Think Tank with Steve Adubato is a production of the Caucus Educational Corporation. Funding has been provided by Valley Bank, the Russell Berry Foundation, South Jersey Industries, New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, Congress Hall, Holy Name, New Jersey Manufacturing Extension Program, New Brunswick Development Corporation, and by IBEW Local 102. Promotional support provided by NJBIA and by New Jersey Globe.
A dream is just a dream until your ambition ignites it. Pursuing your legacy takes drive, resilience, and a financial partner who not only sees your vision for your future, but who will go all in with you and focus your ambitions for what you hunger to achieve next.
At the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, affordability is always top of mind. We offer a variety of energy assistance and other programs to help New Jersey residents reduce their energy use and save money. The Community Solar Energy Program delivers immediate electric bill savings to all subscribers, regardless of income. And our free Comfort Partners program helps qualified residents save money and make energy efficient upgrades. We work to put affordability within reach for New Jersey residents.
Hi, I'm Naomi Gewirtz from the Adler Aphasia Center. Aphasia is a language disorder that usually results from a brain injury such as stroke or a brain tumor. While aphasia can affect one's ability to speak, understand, read, and write, it does not affect intellect. Programs offered at our center help improve communication skills as well as confidence and quality of life while surrounded by others who understand aphasia. If you or a loved one is diagnosed with aphasia, there is hope and community.